This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Now, if you're listening 3 weeks ago, you got to hear Dr. Henry Nyman, Ph.D., and you know that he is one of the world's premier experts on virus mutation recombination. A virologist, I believe, is how you say it. And we discussed the nature of what is now called the COVID-19 virus and a hell of a lot of things have happened since then. We have witnessed its disruptive power. Megacities, Wuhan, China, larger than New York, substantially larger than New York, can you imagine, has been pretty much completely shut down. The streets emptied out. Cruise ships have been quarantined, plural. The quarantines have failed on those cruise ships, and the virus is spreading over much of the world. So in that discussion, just a few weeks ago, Dr. Nyman pointed out that the infection rate was exponential, and now we see the result of that observation. Dr. Nyman, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I understand you've been completely swamped.
Yeah, it's been pretty much out of control on all aspects, actually. How quickly it's emerging, and how it's changing in various countries, and some of the implications of that.
Well, what have you been able to learn about the virus since January 30th? Are the quarantines and disruptions affecting your work yet?
No, not mine. I pretty much get the sequences online, and it hasn't been that disruptive for me or in the United States. I mean, most of the disruption as far as everyday life has been in China. The shutdowns are starting to affect supply chains for various companies, though, that are outside of China dependent.
Yeah, I noticed that the Apple factory is shut down. I guess they won't have any use for their suicide net this week.
Right. It's pretty shut down in China, although it seems to be having an effect. At least the reported cases, the increases have slowed. And exactly how they would transition back and when to transition back, I think that's still largely unclear.
I wanted to ask you more generally about quarantines. It doesn't look like, I mean, you know, I don't really know or have the perspective, but looking at the cruise ship, for example, it looks like quarantines don't always work.
Well, the Diamond Princess there'll be textbooks written about, you know, how not to control infectious disease, and this will be the main example. It was an epic failure. They did not control the virus at all. The quarantine doesn't really meet a quarantine definition at all. The idea of the quarantine is you're supposed to be keeping those people free from interactions with each other as well as the surrounding community, and they're supposed to be disease-free for the incubation period, which is set at 14 days, and then should be tested at the end of that period to ensure that they are negative before release. And everything was violated in how they carried out the quarantine, as well as the cross-contamination, as well as the actual release. I mean, people are being released that have virus, and it was just a fiasco no matter how you looked at it. There was cross-contamination. The crew was infected. The passengers were infected. They were feeding them three meals a day. They were wearing hazmat suits, so they would be protected, but they were going door to door as far as delivering and picking up food, and it was just a disaster. The virus is quite contagious. It's unusually contagious for a virus that has the type of lethality it has.
Unusually contagious for this type of lethality. Now, that's interesting. Can you expand on that a bit?
Well, there's a number called R0 or R0 that kind of estimates how many people would be infected by one person. And it's the number is varied. There were some reports that said it was somewhere between 2 and 4. And now there have been some reports that say it might be as high as 4 to 6 or 6 to 8, I think.
Oh, really?
And yeah, so it is highly contagious. And usually that number is significantly below that. I mean, influenza is contagious, and it's down, I don't know, between like 1 and 2. So it's easily transmitted. And then the fatality rate, it kind of, there's a lot of confusion about the case fatality rate, and that confusion comes from the definition as well as the fact that it's ongoing, so it's difficult to make a calculation. The calculation is usually when you have outcomes. And there have been comparisons made between this coronavirus and SARS and MERS, which are two other coronaviruses that are very similar. And the ability of the virus to cause an atypical pneumonia, which leads to breathing difficulties and then mechanical interventions, and then as far as ECMO machines, where blood is taken out and oxygenated and put back in the patient, because the breathing difficulties prevent the blood from being oxygenated to a reasonable level. And usually the case fatality rate is based on cases with pneumonia. I mean, that's how these diseases were initially identified. SARS is severe acute respiratory distress, and MERS is Middle East respiratory syndrome. And they both are characterized, the key characteristic is the development of this atypical pneumonia that then leads to the breathing difficulties. So those are the patients that are at risk. They get hospitalized, and they can frequently deteriorate in spite of that hospitalization. And so the case fatality rate is based upon the case definition. And the case definition in both of those diseases is based on the pneumonia, that pneumonia is one of the requirements to be considered a case. And that's essentially how it started with this current coronavirus. And that's how it was identified. There were atypical pneumonia cases that were clustered and showing up in Wuhan. And that alerted the physicians that there was something unusual going on, that they were getting all of these cases coming in at the same time. Initially, there was this connection to a wet market that sold seafood as well as other exotic animals. Were kind of slaughtered on the premises. The wet markets were notorious for spreading SARS, and it was the same type of a situation. There was an intermediate host in that case. It was mostly these civet cats. The natural host for the SARS virus is bats, and in fact, bats are the natural host for MERS as well as this novel coronavirus. They've all been identified in bats and can be intermediate species like anteaters for this particular coronavirus. But the point is that the pneumonia is what defines the case, and the case fatality rate for SARS is in double digits. It's around 10%. MERS is as high as 30%. And unfortunately, this virus is in the same ballpark as long as you use the same definition, which is what is the fatality rate for the pneumonia cases. And recently, the case definition was changed to just be cases that were positive for this virus and had some symptoms, but they didn't have to have pneumonia. They could just be positive for the virus and be symptomatic. And that greatly reduces the case fatality rate because the cases that don't develop pneumonia don't die. So the case fatality rate for these milder versions is really zero. And so that would bring the case fatality rate down if you include those down to around 2%, 2 or 3%, which is still rather high, but it's not double digits.
So when you say 10%, when you say 10%, that's for someone who gets to the pneumonia stage?
Correct. Okay. That would be the pneumonia cases. So, that's what the question is. The question is, if you get pneumonia and you go into the hospital, what are the likelihood that it's going to be a fatal disease? And that's what those higher rates were for both SARS and MERS. And initially for this COVID. Then the definition got changed. They didn't need to have pneumonia. They just had to have the virus and have some clinical symptoms. And so they're comparing that of a 2% case fatality rate to SARS of a 10%. They're saying it's much less lethal than SARS, but if you do an apples-to-apples comparison, COVID's at least as lethal as SARS and probably a bit more lethal. It's probably closer to 15%.
Well, and that's the thing, comparisons. It seems like this is a very different thing. I'm looking over some of the things that you have said. An R-naught of 6 to 8, 6 or 8 people possibly infected for each person. I'm taking notes in the way that I generally do on field recordings, listening to you, and I want to encourage the KBOO audience to look this up. It's going to be on Stitcher, on iHeartRadio, on Apple Podcasts. These will appear about half an hour after the end of this broadcast. It'll also be on KBOO.FM. But the things that you're saying, on January 30th when you were on here, you were saying things, for example, about the exponential spread that really raised my eyebrows, and these things were borne out. And now you're saying these pneumonia fatalities can be 10%. So this is starting to make sense in terms of what I've been looking at with the... I've been trying to figure out what's valuable news coming out of China, and it's been clouded. As I said last time around, there are right-wing organizations that try to exaggerate what's going on. But I found even through the exaggeration, apparently there have been cases of people just dropping dead in the street in Hubei province. So this tells me that this... infection rate really is very high, and that the fatality rate really is, you know, shockingly perhaps 2%, as you seem to suggest. Can you tell me something about? Can you tell me more about that? How are you able to drill down on these statistics, or are you able to really?
Well, there were a couple of reports that came out on the initial cases. So, if you recall, the initial group were, there were 41 that were PCR confirmed at the beginning of the outbreak in Wuhan.
That's the reaction test.
Right. And there have been like a couple Lancet reports that basically detail those cases. And if you look at the case fatality rate for the ones that the outcome was known, so that they had either died or been discharged, it was around 16-17%. And then it was expanded somewhat to 99 cases. And again, there weren't that many more outcomes. There were only 8 more outcomes, but 5 of the 8 had died. And indicated that the fatality rate was also in mid double digits. And then if you just look at the reports out of China, which actually may be an undercount on the fatalities, and you look at how many have died versus how many have been discharged, that again is around 15%. So there's a few different data sets, and the limitation on all of this is that they're being calculated as disease in progress. So all the outcomes of all those that would meet that definition, and these would all be pneumonia cases. All of these involve the hospitalized cases. They don't involve the those that are being contacts and they're tested, and some of them are asymptomatic. Some of them have mild cold-like symptoms. They don't develop pneumonia. They don't go into the hospital, and had they not been contacts, they typically wouldn't have even been tested. They're not really clinical cases. They're not so sick that they would go to the doctor. If they didn't go to the doctor, they wouldn't be tested, and they would fly under the radar. Now they're important for the epidemiology of where the virus is and how it's spreading. Uh-huh. But it's not comparable to the case fatality rates that are typically cited for SARS or MERS, because they didn't really fit the case definition. So there've been videos out of China of literally showing people falling over dead and showing people lying in the street and being picked up by ambulances and emergency responders. And so there is some evidence that that the virus can attack the heart and cause sudden death. And that has analogies with the 1918 flu pandemic. That there were similar types of reports where people would be on a bus going to work, and they would just fall over dead, sitting on the bus. So they felt well enough to go to work, but they suddenly died. And so there's that type of analogy. So the exact number of deaths in China are a little bit obscure, but if you just use the official cases, which are just a little over 2,000, and the discharges, which are around 15,000 or so, then you can see that it's well above 10% based on that type of calculation.
Well, that is a shocking thing.
Just to put it in perspective, the majority of people that do get infected with this virus don't develop pneumonia. So just being infected with the virus doesn't mean that you're going to develop pneumonia. You're going to end up in the hospital, and you're going to have, 10 to 15% chance of dying. That about 85% of those that are infected don't develop the pneumonia. So just being positive for the virus doesn't mean you're going to develop this more severe version of the virus. But it was the severe version that was used for the case fatality rates, as some of the comparisons are being made to say that it's much less lethal than those other two viruses, and it's probably somewhere in between those two. It doesn't seem to be quite as lethal as MERS, but it's more lethal than SARS. And the concern is that it is more infectious than either of them, and that's what the concern is that you can get these big numbers are coming out of China. There's 70,000-80,000 people have been lab confirmed as being positive, and you've got a couple thousand deaths. And just to give a comparison, because there's some considerations that the SARS was somewhat seasonal, and it kind of started in the fall, and then it went through the winter, but in the spring it kind of faded away. All of that is true, but it was Actually, it's the 17-year anniversary of the doctor who went to the Metropole Hotel back in 2003. He checked in on the 21st. It's actually the 21st in China already. And so this would be the day that he checked into the Metropole Hotel. He had been treating patients in Guangdong province, and he came to Hong Kong for a wedding. And he had already developed symptoms. He developed symptoms on like the 15th of February.
But, so he was patient one for Hong Kong.
I'm sorry.
So he was patient number one for Hong Kong.
Right. And he really was number one for the international spread because he was at this hotel, and several of the guests were tourists, and one went to Toronto, and she was the index case. Actually, she died at home, but her son ended up going to the hospital there. So she was the index case for Toronto, and then there were three sisters that went to Singapore, and they were the index cases for Singapore. There was a businessman that went to Hanoi, and he was the index case for Hanoi. And then there was a visitor at the hotel who was admitted in Hong Kong, and he was kind of the index case there. So those four groups really exploded the virus onto the international scene. At the time, there had been about 300 cases in Guangdong province, but there had only been 5 deaths. So if you go back 17 years, the number of deaths was very, very small. And then the Metropole Hotel, the virus did have a mutation. It had a 29 nucleotide deletion in one of the genes. And that seemed to be associated with it becoming more aggressive and more.
And there have been similar mutations this time around. Well, we're getting towards the bottom of the hour, so I have some hot questions to ask you right away. Chinese research is saying that the virus may be passed in intestinal gas or feces. Is that a likely vector?
There is some data for that they have been able to isolate the virus from feces, and so it could have those additional routes of transmission.
What's to keep it from spreading here in the U.S.? Is there anything essentially different about Chinese society that aids or spreads its affects its virulence?
No, not really. I mean, some people think there's that appearance, because the same thing with SARS. It started in China, and so most of
you still there?
But everybody's pretty much susceptible. There isn't a predisposition, and it really comes down to being present where there's a lot of virus. The most of these diseases, the severity is dependent upon the viral load.
And so
if you get enough people that have a high level of virus, then when you get infected, you're going to start out at a higher level, and you're more likely to get into these more serious complications.
And that's another parallel with the 1918 flu.
Yeah, that's one of the keys. I mean, they try to control it by limiting mass gatherings, and that did have some effect. Others didn't, kind of disregarded that. They had parades and things along those lines. And you also had, I mean, it was towards the end of World War One, so you had troop ships that had high concentrations of people in close quarters, and that allowed for the virus to spread. And so in the U.S., so far, it hasn't really taken off. But what typically happens is you initially have some imports where people from countries where it is at high concentration end up bringing the virus in. And initially, they're kind of controlled because at least the ones they know about go in the hospital, and they basically limit the transmission because contacts are checked. But With this virus, you can be asymptomatic and have the virus. You can have mild cold-like symptoms and not go to the doctor. So those people would fly under the radar. And the concern is when it turns into community spread, where people are infected and they have no idea why they were infected and they hadn't traveled outside of the country and they were clearly infected by somebody in the country. And several of the countries adjacent to China are now showing up with community spread. Japan is one of them, and Singapore and Hong Kong, and most recently South Korea. So all of those countries are now starting to have community spread, and the numbers are starting to increase where they're getting 10, 20, 30 cases reported in a day, and there are clusters of cases where some of them know who infected them, but they're people that got infected within the country. So it's not like it is being imported. And that's what the concern is that there will be community spread starting in the U.S. So far, there hasn't been any. The only examples of people being infected without leaving the country have been close contacts, like spouses, actually. So a spouse picks it up in China and brings it back to the U.S., and then the spouse gets infected. So
if I understand correctly, then it would really take off at the point in which there is sufficient viral load in some close community group to which it can begin to follow that graph that we see, that exponential spread. And that's, that, you know, for me, the key word is viral load that I'm taking from you right now. That's one of the main things I'm taking away. Well, as I was saying, this is going to be on KBOO.fm, and it's going to be on podcast aggregators, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcast. Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, premier virologist, recombination specialist, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and joining us here on KBOO Radio.
Okay, well, thank you, Teresa.
I really appreciate it.
Be back. Okay, take care.
You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO 90.7 FM in Cascadia and via KBOO.fm to all the ships at sea.